may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
The farther back in history you can look, the further forward you are likely to see. That's sort of a quote from Winston Churchill. I added a few words here and there. The further back in history you can look, the further forward you are likely to see. How true is that, folks? Tonight, well, this is the Hagman and Hagman Report. I'm Doug Hagman. I'm flying solo tonight. Joe is still recuperating. We had a conversation today. He was going to come in, and we decided to give him some extra time to recuperate. After all, his surgery was just last Tuesday, or Wednesday, I guess it was. And I said, man, I'm being a little bit more, a little bit too demanding by having you come in. So why don't you just take and meet with your doctor on Wednesday, which will be a week, and then get released from there. And he said, okay, I'll take care of that. So I didn't have to twist his arm too much. But he said, I'm bored. Now, do some research and get back to me when you feel better. So, but he's doing well. Of course, recovering from surgery. Folks, you are listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report, watching the Hagman and Hagman Report. Here it is, again, Doug Hagman, and our home base on the internet is HagmanandHagman.com. That's for show information, and HagmanReport.com for show prep. And that's what we really need to concentrate on today. Got a great show for you lined up today. Just me in the driver's seat, just me and you, just us. Don't confuse that with justice. No, it's just us. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you for being part of our extended family of listeners. Really appreciate your presence. Really appreciate every email you sent. I was going through some snail mail that we received here at the office. And just so incredibly touched by everyone who has contributed to the show. Thank you so much. Thank you so very much. And who has written a note of support, written a note of encouragement. Each and every one of you, thank you so very much for all you do and being part of our lives. You know, tonight's show is, we're going to break down a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to be breaking down, of course, the Dallas, but not in the traditional sense. The larger, what we're seeing here, what Dallas is, the bigger picture. I'm going to give you the wide angle view tonight of Dallas, because Dallas will represent another significant turning point in our history. Obama's got 190 approximately days left to warm the seat up in the Oval Office, at which point they're going to have to get a cleaning crew in there and scrub everything down because of all the Marxist, Leninist, Maoist propaganda that's stuck to the walls and ceiling and drapes and curtains and floors and whatever. To be sure. But what I've done is I've taken a bigger look here, a larger wide angle look at what's taking place in across this country. And I found a couple of things that actually made me go back to my bookshelf. We've got a vast library here at the Hagman Studio. And I found this book here. And I think I might have shown this to you before. I'm not sure. This book is, this book is 40 years old. And it was published, by U.S. News and World Report back in 1970. Of course, it was one of those really bad binding jobs. So it's falling apart. But I intend to get it fixed from here. It's called Communism and the New Left, hence the name of this program, because a lot of what we're seeing here today is a reformulation of what's in this book. Very important information. This book names names, it names parties, it names different organizations that existed in the 1970s, all right? Well, into the 60s and the 70s. We've written the rest of the story since then, or the rest of the story has been written since then. Unfortunately, not too many people have told the story since then. So we're going to be going through that tonight, going through a lot of things tonight. I'd also like to direct you to, for show prep, folks, HagmanReport.com. My article today, Obama's Agenda of Anarchy. Please read that after the show. And I'd also urge you to do one more thing. I'm a senior contributing writer at CanadaFreePress.com. And, of course, at Canada Free Press, they've got the ability to accept and moderate comments. Go ahead and discuss this article at CanadaFreePress.com. It's on the front page. It's above the fold. I'm going to be talking about this article, too. The reason that this article is so important is we have noticed, we meaning everyone here at the office, Canada Free Press has noticed this, other journalists have noticed how we're being censored. The truth is being censored. History is being rewritten just at an incredible rate. New books are not being cataloged properly. If you write a new book about history or about Obama, you will watch and see the censorship that has been taking place or is taking place. It's a very disconcerting thing to watch. And you might think it's not a very big deal in the scheme of things, but as you look through the information, you'll see how the truth is being censored from the American people. And I want to thank you too for hanging with me. I know I sound kind of, still sound kind of nasally. Had a quite a weekend. And, pretty much never left my home all weekend, which was all right. Didn't see my wife too much. I think I was awake for about all of 45 minutes the entire weekend, so got some good rest. But thanks for your prayers as well. But let's get into a couple of things right now. You'll notice on my monitor to my right, I've got a picture of Obama. This is a creation by our graphic designer, creative evangelist, J.D. There you go. Just smack the monitor up there. That's pretty much the image, the mental image you probably should retain of this particular renegade in chief. The ambush. Now, Obama's Agenda of Anarchy, which is really the tent poles of tonight's program. The ambush in Dallas that specifically targeted white police officers last week. That, of course, the most visibly brazen act of terror against police officers this century. And I know by body count, of course, 9/11 had many more officers were killed, but specifically targeting officers. What happened in Dallas is as horrific as you can get. The implications over Dallas, over that attack, are extremely severe and extremely critical to understand. But to understand what we are witnessing today, it must first be made clear that the murderous attacks on police have little to do with the questionable attacks or questionable deaths of the men, the people who have died at the hands of the police departments across the country. Now, just to be clear, because we have a lot of police officers who listen to this program. I've got friends who are police officers, federal and local police officers. They're good people. Just to be clear, we are pro-law enforcement. Now, that doesn't mean we are pro- or anti-Second Amendment, anti-Fourth Amendment people. No. No, law enforcement has a job to do. That job, of course, is a difficult one at best. We are against the unfair or the beating of unarmed individuals. We are against police officers going far beyond what they have been hired to do. We are against the unconstitutional roadside stops and your papers, please. We're against all of that. And you know, many police officers, at least the ones I know, are as well. But to say that does not mean that we are against police officers or their conduct, just the bad ones, for lack of a better descriptive term. But let's put everything in perspective. How many people, and I had brought this up before, but because this is a new program and this is a new week and even some new listeners, and I want to thank you, John from the UK for listening in. Also, Robert from Iowa, God bless you. Thank you. A lot of new listeners all across the United States. But how many people do you think were fatally shot by police in 2015? The Washington Post had done an article about this, had done a project, a research project on this. How many people were fatally shot by police in 2015? It turns out 990 people. 990. 948 were men, and 42 were women, were female. All right? In 2015. How many of that 990 were white or black? You would think, from hearing everything on the news, that that there's this disparate number of black people being murdered by police officers. Well, as it turns out, 494 Caucasian people were murdered, were fatally shot by police in 2015. That's 494. That's well over 50%. 258 black persons were shot fatally in 2015 by police. So you've got the figures, 494 white, 258 black. Hispanic, 172. Others, 38. And for some reason unknown, I'm not exactly certain what that means, 28. Statistically, however, insignificant, we know they're not black. So in total, out of 990 people fatally shot in 2015, 258 people were black. Now, these are the numbers by the Washington Post commissioned study. By the Washington Post, you can't claim that that's a conservative jury. This was not done by the NRA. Okay, this 18 of the people fatally shot by police in 2015. 18 of them were under the age of 18. By the numbers, 18 to 29, 330. 30 to 44, 353. 45 and over, 277. unknown 12. All right, numbers. They also had something else called threat level. Was there an attack in progress? Now, this is further broken down, but this is all I'm going to give you, because this is all that's really needed. An attack in progress, meaning that there was an attack of some kind by the person that was fatally shot, either against the police or against someone else, or there was something bad taking place. Clearly, a majority at 730. And then they go into other and undetermined, which, again, not knowing or not really having the statistical meanings behind that, not really a problem. So, by the numbers, the number of black people fatally shot by police in 2015 were 258 out of the entire 990 people. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that that there are a whole lot more white people shot by police than blacks. And if you want to do, excuse me, for example, a statistical view of this, you know, dig further into the statistics, or you might say, yeah, but there's more white people in the United States. You can break it down by geography, by region, by area, and even take it further. No matter how you skew the numbers, how you mess with the numbers, it doesn't come out where the blacks are overly shot by police, fatally shot by police. It doesn't work out that way. So I just want you to know that. So what we're witnessing today with Black Lives Matter, what we're witnessing today is not about those black people who were shot by police in 2015, 2014, and previous. Now, I will say this, okay, the numbers do change in previous years, but not in favor of black fatalities. So, hang on a second. And that would have been pretty bad to hear on the air. I just had to clear my nose there. Anyway, now, have we seen this before? Yes, indeed we have. Again, comes back to my book, and I'll just hold the cover up here, Communism and the New Left. We've seen this happen before. This type of orchestrated chaos, folks, specifically in the late 1960s and 1970s, during the radicalization of students and people across college campuses, just a number of people, number of young people. We've seen the protests, the sit-ins, the armed takeovers of campus offices by the radical left, have we not? They today are increasing, just as they were back in the 60s. Back then, the increases and their modes and reasons for actions and protests were blamed on the Vietnam War primarily. Look at what's happening today. Can we see some parallels today? Many of the Black Lives Matter protesters are blaming war, whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, blaming the Bush administration. And I'm not saying that they're wrong necessarily, but you can see some of the parallels between the 1960s and 1970s through this century right now. Some of the very people who were involved in the street-level takeovers are or have been in power under Obama. This is important because as we break down, and it's necessary to do this, as we break down Black Lives Matter, the organization, we split open this rock. We start looking under the rock that is Black Lives Matter. A lot of things come flying out of there and come crawling out of there. But take, for example, Eric Holder, who was Obama's first attorney general when he came into office back in 2009. Eric Holder, for example, participated in the takeover of the former Columbia ROTC office, demanding that it be renamed to the Malcolm X Lounge. Now, this was an unoccupied building within Columbia University. Now, when you do some research on this, just to tell you how disingenuous the historians are, certain historians are, there were two actual two takeovers at Columbia University, one in 1968 and the other in 1970. The disingenuous part of the historians will say, well, Holder wasn't even in college in 1968. He was still in high school. Well, of course. 1970, he was a freshman at Columbia and was recruited for that particular takeover, which was a sit-in. Now, you're going to see other websites and even Wikipedia, I believe, will challenge the fact that these people were armed. These protesters were armed at the time. And you might ask, what does it matter? Well, it matters a lot, because facts do matter. The fact is, Holder himself had a couple of times said, look, we were armed during that takeover in 1970. By the way, they held out for 5 days. But of course, you're going to see this disputed on a number of websites. Because again, they're going to other sources of information. Holder himself has admitted the fact that some of those people who took over that lounge were in fact armed. Snopes is a good example of one website that, in my view, at least in my professional estimation, gets it wrong or presents it improperly. Now, what we're seeing today, it's important to note that other members of Obama's tight inner circle, they have played and continue to play important roles to varying degrees, including his advisors. Remember people like Van Jones and others in this fundamental changing of the United States. Bill Ayers. Don't forget Bill Ayers and Bernardine Dorn. You know, folks, remember that when we had talked about, for example, we had talked about Obama's heritage, or, you know, Obama's lineage, Obama's history, the people Obama has been sided with or been associated with. The classmate of Obama, when you go back and look, and this is why some of the records that aren't available now are so extremely important. For example, his days at Occidental College, off limits, Columbia, off limits. But anyway, Dr. John C. Drew, classmate of Obama at Occidental College, you can see it up here on the screen. The young Obama was a garden variety Marxist-Leninist. You can't get much clearer than that. He and his sophomore year roommate, Hassan Chandu, believed that social forces were creating an inevitable communist revolution in the United States, and it was important to have a highly trained elite of educated leaders guide this revolutionary process and oversee it. Once the revolution took place, remember, this was at the height of the Cold War during the end of Carter, beginning of Reagan days. Now, this is what also, too, Ronald Reagan had just been elected president and the Soviet Union was still our mortal enemy. It's interesting because we see Obama taking the side of the Soviet Union at the time. We see some of Obama's friends taking the sides of the communists. And we see that today. So, we are seeing today, folks, exactly what happens when we allow a man with known ties to members of Marxist, Leninist, even the Maoist left, take charge of a nation. We're seeing the fruits of his known associations, past and present, that were brushed aside. And many of you conservatives out there brushed these aside, saying his lineage, his bona fides don't really matter. We need to fight him on the issues, not on his past. Well, we're seeing, and of course we were called, you know, fringe conspiracy talk, even by some of the people in our own circles. Those who have questioned his meteoric rise to power, from community organizer to his place at the Oval Office. Yeah, we were told to sit down and shut up. Through his appointments, folks, Obama, and through his own words, his biases are perfectly clear. We know his biases with respect to Muslims. When an ill wind blows, he's going to side with the Muslims, paraphrasing his words from his book. Of course, when the Marxist or the winds of revolution blow, as they are doing today, who is he going to side with? He's going to side with the Marxist, Leninist, revolutionaries. And any movements to replace the racist, capitalist, imperialist American system. But see, in order to replace what we got right now, the old system has to be burnt to the ground. Remember way back when in 2008, Election Day? And I think I might have it here. Let me just double check here. No, I'm doing this. Let's see here. I'm doing this kind of on the fly. So bear with me. But remember on Election Day, how many people remember this photograph? Black Panthers at the voting booth in Philadelphia. The intimidating presence of armed Black Panthers in voting areas in Philadelphia, Election Day 2008. What happened to that case? Actually, the Bush administration attorney general had that case and dropped it. Didn't do anything with it. Left it for Obama. Holder picked it back up, and Holder decided through the recommendation of Obama not to pursue criminal charges. Eric Holder, by orders of Obama. Don't charge the Black Panthers. And it was kind of a wink and a nod initially by the Bush administration, hey, you don't have to prosecute these people. And of course, Holder did not. Did this not embolden the Black Panthers? Did this not set back racial relations because of the fact that, well, here we have obvious racists here in this photograph. These people are truly racist. Holder had an opportunity to fight racism. Racism comes in black, white, and all colors, and didn't do this. So weren't race relations set back because of this? And weren't the Black Panthers, the new Black Panthers now, emboldened by the lack of prosecution? I think so. Fast forward to 2009. Remember the famous, or now infamous, Beer Summit of 2009? I mentioned this in my article. It was a highly spun meeting that occurred at the White House, which stemmed from Henry Louis Gates, his arrest. Now, Gates, what at the time was a black Harvard University professor. He was arrested by a white police officer, Sergeant James Crowley, of the Cambridge Police Department at his home on July 16, 2009. Gates had just come back from China, apparently forgot his key or didn't have his key and was breaking into his own home to go home, to get into the house. Well, neighbors called the police. Gates was detained because, well, didn't know who he was. And a big racial thing came of that. So without knowing the facts, Obama spouts off and says, well, that's not right. It's due to racial bias. And, of course, called for a meeting at the White House and infamously became known as the Beer Summit. And Gates was paraded out as the victim of racial profiling and Sergeant Crowley, of course, as the white police officer making a decision based on solely on race. Damn the facts. And it just got worse from there. But even more important than all of that, his associates, as we had discussed in the beginning. And folks, you know this. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you know most of the people associated with Obama. You know, Bill Ayers. We've had Larry Grathwall on talking about Bill Ayers. You know his wife, Bernadine Dorn. We've had Larry Grathwall talking about Bernadine Dorn. Two people, two individuals with access to Obama at the White House. And, of course, Bernadine Dorn being part of the Weather Underground, as was Bill Ayers, wanted by the FBI, arrested, unrepentant terrorists, both. Here's Bernadine Dorn today, cleaned up, yet still adhering to radical Marxist-Leninist views. This is Obama's inner circle. Now, Obama's going to deny that, but White House visitor logs and other writings will show that, yes, there is a relationship between Obama and many of his associates, Obama's associates, with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. Again, we don't have to belabor the issue. You know the facts. And, of course, here's Bill Ayers. That picture was taken and published on, actually, 9/11/2001. Bill Ayers standing on top of an American flag. But when you start taking things apart and start looking at the different things, start looking at the different aspects of Black Lives Matter, and I would urge everyone to do this. It's not what you think. Black Lives Matter is not what you think it is. When I was writing the article today about Black Lives Matter and about Obama, the anarchist, I was trying to think of an analogy, and the only thing I could think of was Benghazi or the email scandal. I mean, they're lies. They're all the same lies. They're lies using the same playbook. They're lies from the same playbook to misrepresent the facts. Let me tell you about Black Lives Matter. I mean, how many people think you know about what Black Lives Matter is, and how many of our astute talk show hosts really get in and talk about Black Lives Matter? Well, I don't know of too many that really break it down and follow the money. You know, we're seeing today, scenes like this across the United States, where we have protesters. Big signs, Black Lives Matter. Well, all lives matter. But we're seeing that, aren't we? We're seeing these kind of protests. Folks, the Black Lives Matter movement, they say it was a spontaneous uprising born of inner city frustration, of this need for equality and justice for blacks. And again, it just happened to spontaneously form back in 2013. That's not the case at all. Black Lives Matter has been in formation for a number of years now, just under different names. There are three individuals who are behind Black Lives Matter. And this is important for you to know. Three individuals who are a part of Black Lives Matter. I'm going to show you all three right now. And here we go. On the monitor to my right, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi. Black Lives Matter was established formally under BLM in 2013 by these three women. BLM was co-founded by these three women. Their objective was to stoke black rage and galvanize a protest movement in response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman. Remember the Trayvon Martin case and issues prior to that. Well, they took the hashtag and put it before Black Lives Matter and use that as a social networking rallying cry for writers, public speakers, politicians, anyone who wanted to jump on that bandwagon. And as we look at this, look at how this came about, we have to look at the individuals who brought this about. The three women who brought this about have interesting backgrounds. Let me see if I can find the notes. Regardless, these three women, and in particular, Alicia Garza, are self-proclaimed Marxists. They're anti-capitalist, anti-white. They're not just pro-black, they're anti-white. And they're anti-immigration laws. They're for open immigration, open borders, no questions asked. Gonna get into this in a minute here, because to understand what this combination, what these three women have done and are doing, and the groups that have formed and comprise Black Lives Matter is so extremely important. They adopted the slogan, by the way, "Hands up, don't shoot." That was first popularized by Dream Defenders and grew out of the death of Michael Brown. Remember that? The young black man in Ferguson, Missouri, who was killed by a white police officer? This after he tried to take the officer's handgun during a confrontation. Now, in the immediate aftermath of that incident, numerous racial agitators circulated the false narrative that Brown had been shot after raising his hands in complete submission and said, "Don't shoot." Hence the rallying cry, "Hands up, don't shoot." Demanding that Americans abandon the lie that the deep psychological wounds of slavery, racism, and structural oppression are just merely figments of the black person's imagination. Black Lives Matter, BLM, aims to force the country to become, quote, and I quote, "uncomfortable about institutional racism," emphasizing the permanence of American depredations. BLM maintains that the nation's corrupt democracy was originally built on genocide, slavery, corrupt democracy, obviously, and traditions of patriarchy, classism, racism, and even unwarranted military action. They endure to this day, according to BLM. We are ugly Americans, according to BLM. There is oppression. Structural oppression prevents many of us from realizing our dreams, the blacks, that is. That blacks in the United States are routinely dehumanized. That they're not given any opportunities or any chances to make it in the United States. They are powerless at the hands of the state. They are being deprived of their basic human rights and dignity. They are being intentionally targeted for extrajudicial killings by police officers and within the criminal justice system. This, according to BLM. They are hunted by police and vigilantes, according to BLM. They also state that they are collectively subjected to inhumane conditions in a white supremacist system. All right. It's interesting because although they profess to articulate the needs and grievances of black people in general, as a whole, as a group, as a race, the organizers state, look, it's necessary that we go well beyond the narrow nationalism that merely urges black people to, quote, "love black, live black, and buy black." No, we can't have that. We can't have just that, that is. We've been so marginalized, that is the black race, according to BLM, that we must do more. In fact, we must take on the causes of others that include but are not limited to the queers and transgendered who are being marginalized. who bear a unique burden in our society that disposes them like disposes them as garbage. This is according to BLM. This is what whites are doing to blacks, whites are doing to homosexuals, and the LGBT community. BLM has also taken up the mantle, not of just the blacks, not of just the LGBTs now, but of Muslims as well, saying that they are being racially profiled unfairly. And they've also taken up the mantle for those in the country illegally. In my article, I do note that the three co-founders of BLM, let me just make sure I get this correctly here. One of the co-founders, BLM co-founder Opal Tometi, now she was born to a set of parents who came to this country illegally in 1983 from Nigeria. She was born in America in 1984 to illegal aliens in this country. That's Opal Tometi. She's been a national organizer for Black Alliance for Just Immigration, which is a George Soros-funded group. Their goal is to advance immigrant rights and racial justice for African Americans, African Latinos, and African and Caribbean immigrant communities. Soros' money is behind this anchor baby, co-founder of BLM, but also founder or the organizer for Black Alliance for Just Immigration. You might be surprised to learn that on September 23rd, 2013, she accepted, and this is Opal Tometi, accepted an invitation to the White House and met with one of Obama's African-American liaisons, or a liaison to the African-American community. Heather Foster was her name. Foster helped coordinate Obama's response to various high-profile instances of blacks having been shot by police officers. This woman, Opal Tometi, basically gave the Obama regime the script, what to say, how to handle things. A Marxist. We look at Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, both self-proclaimed Marxists. All three are radical progressives. All three believe that America is racist, sexist, homophobic, and again, was built on genocide. But when you start peeling the layers of the onion back even further, it's interesting because, Patrice Cullors met with Michelle Obama, forgot to add that, at the White House on February 20th, 2015. In July of 2015, Cullors spoke at the annual Netroots Nation Convention in Phoenix. Now, here's a woman, co-founder of Black Lives Matter, said this, subsequent to the meeting with Michelle Obama. She exhorted fellow blacks to rise the F up and burn everything down. Marxist indeed. She also said that the black-on-black crime is nothing more than a white man's myth. Many of the groups associated with BLM and its co-founders are merely front groups for Marxist-Leninist freedom, the Marxist-Leninist group called Freedom Road Socialist Organization, abbreviated FRSO. You've got offshoots of that, various other acronyms in DWA, SOUL, RTTC, and POWER. Basically, what we have are different groups, all Marxist-Leninist, all communist-based groups, all groups who believe that we need, or that America needs to be burnt down and reestablished in their image, in the image of a Marxist, in the image of a communist. And when you start putting the pieces together, we're seeing that we are watching this coup being orchestrated from the White House. I don't think you can doubt that. I don't think there's any doubt that Obama is behind much of this. Did you notice today, folks, that Obama is to speak at Dallas, and he's not wanted there? When you take a look at the Black Lives Matter, the associations with Black Lives Matter today, all the people involved, the three people that are pictured here, the three women, these women didn't start Black Lives Matter. They just applied it to social media. But these three are all Marxist, communist, socialist renegades. The playbook they're using, with the exception of social media, comes from the original playbook of the original communist, Marxist, Leninist back in the 1960s, 1970s. So what does this mean for us right now? The operational consistencies we are seeing, they're astounding. When you start looking at what happened in 1968, you start looking at what happened with the Black Panthers, with the Weather Underground, we have seen, and we're seeing, this resurgence now of the same, of basically of the same playbook, the same plays being made, coming out right now. But it's getting worse. As we monitor the social networking, we are seeing the new Black Panthers, which, by the way, disavow any relationship to the old Black Panthers, except they stole their name. I don't believe that's true. In my view, based on everything I found, that is not true. That is a lie. They're basing a lot of their current actions on the actions of the former Black Panthers of the 60s. But when you start taking a look at what's taking place with the new Black Panthers, Black Lives Matter, and all of these subgroups, they're all Marxists, they're all Leninists, they're all communists. They are trying to, and doing an effective job, by the way. They're selling Americans. Well, it's wrong. I mean, there's this disproportionate number of blacks being killed by police. There's if you're a black man in today's America, you're having a hard time. It's the police, it's the system's fault. We have to change the system. And I will admit, there are problems. There are definite problems with certain police officers, certain police departments. I understand that. But all professions have problems. But what they are attempting to do, and what they are doing right now, and what they've done with expedience over the last several months alone, well, since 2013, they have managed in such a short period of time to merge with the Muslims, the illegal aliens in this country, groups like MS-13, the communists, the Communist Party USA, the socialists and their various groups. They are now taking on the cause of all of these other groups in this country. Much like, yeah, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Very similar to that, but bigger than that. Because all of these groups have one thing in common, and that's the destruction of the United States. That's what's taking place right now. And as we look over the landscape, the immediate landscape, as we look over the summer events coming up, we are seeing a trending in the social media, backed by BLM, backed by these three women, backed by others related and associated with these women. We are seeing calls for additional strikes on the police. We're seeing calls for the burning down of our cities, the burning up of our cities, the destruction of the white man's privilege. We are seeing calls for people to go out and shoot white men and to take their stuff. Yeah, take their stuff because of the years of oppression. And the call is to do it now. There are calls out, numerous calls on all kind, on all the social media channels to disrupt the Republican National Convention, to disrupt the convention, to harass anyone who supports Donald Trump or anyone on the conservative side. They're calling for war against Christians. They're calling for the death of the white man and of the Christian, and the elevation of the black, of the illegal alien, of the lawbreaker and the lawless, the LGBT community. They are ingratiating themselves within that community as well. This is what we're seeing take place right now. And it's all being allowed, facilitated even, at the highest levels of our government, at the highest levels of our judiciary, of our executive branch. Meanwhile, people either don't get it, don't believe it, or think it's hyped. It's overstated. It's not. There are, and notice too, calls are to assassinate, to kill white police officers. This is one call that's being taken up by the Muslims in this country. By, remember all of the illegals brought in by Obama? There's no allegiance here to anything American, and certainly no allegiance to any Caucasian male. This is all part of a larger plan, larger agenda. Back in the 1960s, of course, there was a big push with Johnson to open the gates, the floodgates, for not just Western Europeans to come into this country, but people of color, people from Africa, people from other parts of the world. And that did take place. The call is now, yeah, regardless of where you're from, come on in. You don't need papers. And we're going to be giving you benefits. But you have to side with us. See, this illegal immigration or illegal alien invasion, it's not about mere votes. It's not anything about, I mean, it's not just about votes. It's not just about cheap labor. It's about having pawns in the game. Black Lives Matter is a lie. It's a lie being sold by the public, or to the public, by the media, by the politicians, under the pretext of equal rights. Just as we were sold the bill of goods, or some of us were, that homosexual marriage equality, was about equal rights. It was not about equal rights. It was about special rights, and even more than that. So too is this. Notice the same lies that were used in Benghazi, the pretext used in Benghazi. Same lines, same playbook, same people. On the other side, we're going to tell you exactly what we believe is going to happen this summer when we come back. Doug Hagman, sitting in for Joe Hagman. Stay right where you're at. More to follow.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.